This MusicAndSports.net Spotlight is brought to you by Piano Finders, member of the National Association of Music Merchants. Karen Lyle with you again, and we're going to hear from Barry Zito, three-time All-Star, great player, two-time World Series champion, Cy Young Award winner, who pitched 15 seasons from the Oakland A's and San Francisco Giants. In preparation for his life after baseball, Barry dove into the national music scene and now has an album titled No Secrets.
I guess my heart, it lied to me. It told me, yeah, that I could be the one to just move on. Tell me why these feelings are so strong enough to wreck.
Barry came from a musical family. His dad was an arranger, conductor, and band leader for Nat King Cole.
My father would write out the parts for each person in the band. One of the best stories, I think, for Nat, though, was there's a famous song called Nature Boy, which is, you know, it's a jazz standard now, and it's been cut by many people. And my father and Nat were hanging out. I believe they were on the road, and somebody came up to Nat and said, hey, Nat, there's this kind of strange-looking man who has this song that he wants to play for you. And, you know, Nat was a really great guy, and Nat said, you know, all right, well, let's see what he's got. And it was the guy who wrote Nature Boy, who I believe was homeless at the time. And he came in and played it on piano and sang it. And my father and Nat and a couple other people were around the piano. And Nat loved it so much that he cut it. And that song, you know, from that day forward has gone on to be a huge song.
Barry took his guitar with him when he was on the road.
For me, music was always an escape. It was something that I would do to clear my head. I would just be home playing acoustic guitar. I started playing when I was 21. And I knew I was going to be in hotels and things like that playing baseball. And So for me, it was come home, play at night, you know, play on the road, bring the guitar, do those types of things. And, you know, it took many years to become proficient enough to actually start playing other people's music and things I could hear on the radio. But no matter what skill level I was at, it always created this catharsis for me.
Music and sports are connected for Barry.
There's a lot of similarities between pitching and music. I mean, you have to get your self-consciousness completely out of there. And stay in what you're doing. And when you're performing on stage, I mean, it's about giving. It's not about receiving something from someone. And, you know, that for me is, it's a challenge every time I do it, but that's why I love it. And, you know, telling a story set to melody is probably the coolest thing you can do when you can touch someone's heart and make somebody feel like they can relate to a story that you wrote about yourself and or your life. You know, things are universal in that.
Thanks so much, Barry. This is Karen Lyle with you here on MusicAndSports.net Spotlight. Special thanks to our sponsor, Piano Finders, a NAM member bringing these stories to music and sports fans globally on Sports Byline USA.
All right, thank you for that, and you get a little Christopher Cross there, and that means it's 9:40 on a Tuesday, and this is when we check in with our friends over at SalesportTalk.com. Patty Mangan, who's been on the show many times in person on the phone, and Patty and I were together over at SaleGP a couple months ago here in San Francisco. She joins us on the line right now, and Patty, I know you are a member also of the South Beach Yacht Club, and that's the one that is adjacent to Oracle Park where the Giants play. It's kind of a little happy marriage there, isn't it?
It is. It's something that, you know, when the park was being developed, they decided to redevelop the entire waterfront there, and the Yacht Club had been in a double wide on Pier 40 since 1988, and it was a great little location, and, you know, everybody pitched in, and there are many yacht clubs that are essentially double wides, but when they decided to develop a new building for the Harbor Master, also in a double wide at the time, we got to go for that tenancy and set up, and actually our members completely designed and built out the club, which I don't think you've been to yet, Rick.
I've walked by it a million times, but they won't let me in because I'm from Richmond.
That's not true.
Well, the thing is, too, I think that just taking a step back, when the Giants, of course, paid for that park with our own money. It still had to go to a vote. It still barely passed. And people just thought, wow, they're going to ruin everything. And if, you know, I remember the old, if you went across the lefty old dual bridge, it was not good. And that whole area there was pretty lame. And you just look at it now since the park opened in 2000, what it's done. And what has it done for your yacht club now? Because it looks like every mooring or dock is full.
Well, the marina itself, yeah, it's been full for a long time, and it's about 700 splits, and it's, I should say harbor. It's called harbor, but it the life of the ballpark is kind of like breathing. It's kind of like being in a relationship with somebody that when they're excited, you're excited or you're annoyed, and when they're slumbering, you too slumber. So in between the seasons, you know, and in the special events and so on, we adjust to that, right? So our harbor, our parking lot, right next to the, we're under the glove, is a reflection of what's going on in terms of if it's a game weekend, we all assess what how and what we're going to do in terms of getting to the harbor to be able to get to your boat, right? But getting through all the traffic and maybe adjusting because of what time you're going to come and what time you're going to leave. But inside the club, we're adjusting to the energy of our members who are Giants fans who are coming in and having a drink before they go, or they're coming after the game and having a drink and a bite to eat before they go home. And so we are constantly adjusting to that. One of the bigger events back in 2018 when I got wind of the International Rugby World Cup coming to the ballpark, coming to the USA for the first time, but coming to Oracle, I was like, that is an opportunity. And so I ended up reaching out to the IRSU and saying, when you're in town, we're extending an invitation for you to be our guest for the 3 days that was happening. And that turned out to be amazing because we, you know, across from the ballpark, the family members of all the players were able to come together and enjoy in between these 20-minute, you know, competitions. They were able to have a place, a base, other than the stands, to collectively talk about their sons and daughters and to talk about the competition, but to get to know each other. Though they were all Irish, they didn't always see each other at these events. This was a way for them to all get together, and they loved it, and we loved it. And we ran out of beer. We ran out of everything. I remember after the first competition, one of the bunch of fathers came running ahead of everybody, and they were like, you know, we need pitchers of beer. I'm like, okay. And they said, how much is it? And I happened to be standing there at the time, and I leaned over and I said, it's 14. And then they go, 40? And I said, no, 14. And then they go, was that 40? And I said, $14. And they're like, oh.
By the way, just as an aside, you mentioned the glove, and Jack Bear, who I've known since 94 when the McGowan group came in, that actually was modeled after his dad's glove, and so he brought it in and they did the original miniature version of it in bronze to say this is what it would look like. And then they built it, and he actually gave me the bronze version, which sits on my mantle, and I'm not a Giants fan, so is that a crime?
Well, you could put it on tour, much like other art exhibits.
I could, or pretend like it's my high. And by the way, I'll throw this in, and I hope they're not friends of yours, but that Frankie's Java House, some of the most pretentious, worst bartenders in San Francisco, so avoid that place.
You know, I've been there once. And that was for an iced tea.
Yeah, I don't recommend. So tell me about, by the way, we're speaking with Patty Mangan from SalesportTalk.com as I'm trashing San Francisco establishments. Tell us about the Jazz Cup.
So this weekend is our annual Jazz Cup. I think it's the 35th edition. So This is a downwind race. So between off of Treasure Island, we start. We'll have 13 divisions that will start. In other words, there are 13 different classes of boats that will start on the start line. And then every 5 minutes, another division will start. And they'll all head to Benicia. That's a 17 mile race to the finish line down just past the Benicia Yacht Club. And there will be anywhere from 80 to 100 boats involved. And that's where you get the divisions. You've got the spinnaker boats and the non-spinnaker boats and the sport boats. And so it's a big, long race. Now, depending on the current, if it's a flood, in other words, all the water is coming in from the Golden Gate and flooding the bay, that will push them along. If it's an ebb, it'll hold them back at points. So along the way, depending on the wind and the current, they could have all kinds of advantages and major obstacles to get to that finish line. I've done this for 10 years, and there's been a couple of them where nobody got across the finish line due to the current and wind.
Really?
But,
wow.
Yeah, 100 boats struggling to get there. But
to get to Benicia?
To Benicia, yeah.
It's that hard. It's like the Cape of Good Cape Horn, huh?
Well, if the current's against you, if the wind's against you,
and
the bay has got a lot of microclimates, different places like south of the bridge is a very different area to compete in. But it's also the last big kind of communal race amongst all the yacht clubs and boaters of the summer, kind of as a somewhat of a last gasp on the racing for the summer. Mm-hmm. And then we go, those who go into the Rolex big boat held over at St. Francis Yacht Club, that'll be mid-September. And then the Red Bra Regatta will be an all-women, the largest all-woman race held off of a South Beach Yacht Club, yeah. So that's at the 23rd. But the Jazz Cup brings out a lot of competitors, people who have been competing against each other for nearly 30 years.
I'm just looking at southbeachyachtclub.org. An annual individual member with voting privileges per year, $765.84. They had to throw in the 84 cents, huh?
Well, we voted as a group a couple years back that we were, the increases would be based on what's that annual CPI, and so that that is based on the consumer price index, and therefore it's just kind of built in every year, and so it might go up $1.06, it might go up $3. It depends on the economy, and then that way there wasn't this constant, do we raise the dues, to adjust to the cost of inflation, blah, blah, blah.
It is a $100 application fee, and if you don't get accepted, you keep the $100. So do you just want to make sure these guys aren't like, meth dealers before you let them in?
Well, I don't know. Meth dealers have the money. But, I'm talking, it's really about all of our members are boaters. And the location is quite desirable. And a lot of people who might come through as guests would be like, oh, I'd like to be a part of this. But if you're not a boater, it's not a fit. It's a volunteer-run club. Only one paid club manager. And everything else. Bartending. I'm a bartender. I'm the membership officer by chance. I can't believe you're doing
it. I'm just keeping it real. Hey, are you allowed to sleep on your boat in the slip?
Yes.
Okay. So they don't. Because I'm sure a lot of people live on their boat, right?
No. There's kind of a Bay Area-wide rule from the BCDC in that only a percentage of each harbor can have liveaboards, and they're very strict about them, and they're very controlled. I would say that I'm aware that Brisbane has more or something along those lines, but no, living aboard is not a guarantee, and hard to come by.
All right, last question for you. We just have a couple minutes. What's it like going to the Gotham Club at the Giants?
Well, I joined back, when did it start? Around 2013 I joined, and it's really fun. It's a great little kind of, it's a bar within the club and within the stadium, and you just kind of meet your friends there, have a couple of drinks, maybe have dinner in the restaurant, and then go to your seats and enjoy the game. And then you come back and have a post-game drink. The club stays open 1 hour after the last out. And so it's just a way to kind of start and end your experience. And then upstairs, there's a secondary club that has a bowling alley, which my niece loves and has come to many, many times. So it's a great experience. It's a family.
Very great. Patty Mangan, SailSportTalk.com. Check it out. All the interesting articles and intrigue therein. Patty, thanks for your time, and we'll catch up with you soon.
I'll see you, Rick.